Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we better be good. Today we have Senda, Phil, and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about Senda's article, Difficult Decisions in Your Game. Before we dive into that topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. Hey, you two, I heard you both got to attend Genghis Khan recently, and I know you'll cover this on Pandas Talking Games and Misdirected Mark, but can you give the Gnomecast a slight scoop on how the con was?
Yeah, it was really good. It was in a new location.
Yeah, nice new hotel. Yeah,
the hotel was really nice, ample parking.
Mm-hmm.
Decent location, right? Like there was food around and stuff like that. So
yeah,
overall, really nice, well organized.
Yeah, they'd actually added a key person since the last time I'd been to that convention, like to organize things and stuff. And she was amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if her official title was con director
or what. Yeah, but she's amazing.
Yeah, she was really good about getting everything set up and
yeah.
All of that.
Now, is Genghis Khan the one that has the huge Savage Worlds presence?
Yes.
They both do. There's two of them here in Colorado. There's Genghis Khan, which is in February, and Tacticon, which is September, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the Rocky Mountain Savages, as they're known, attend both in full force.
Yeah.
Ah.
There. And usually also Shane.
Oh, yeah. Shane Hensley Shane Hensley, the creator of Savage Worlds,
he's always
in attendance both cons every year, which is, you know, pretty awesome. All he does is like he just goes around and plays in games and, you know, like just sits in. So at some point, if you're a Savage Worlds GM, like you have a chance of Shane Hensley just sitting down and, you know, like crashing your game, like just to, you know, just to sit and play.
I think he came to Con on the Cob one year and sat in on Heather Ferris's game. And when she realized that, she like had to leave the room for a moment to have a slight freak out
right
before going back in and running her game.
Yeah, they do. He's always there for sure for Savage Saturday Night, which is at both conventions on the Saturday night. They do a giant, I don't even know how many tables of Savage Worlds. Yeah. Great GMs in that group. Mm-hmm. Fantastic people.
How about games you guys got to run or play?
Yeah.
We ran, we actually ran everything together because I was not sure what shape I'd be in after my arm. So we basically did everything together and we ran Turning Point.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went really well.
Mm-hmm. Second time it's been run.
Second time it has ever seen the table, and the generalized results very much reflected the same as the first time.
And we could say that one's still in alpha testing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If we've only ever played it twice.
Twice. It's definitely an alpha.
It's looking really good for an alpha. Like, there are little bits that I think we know that we have to not even fix, but we need to create some things to make it run smoother.
Right. Like, there are some places where we're just seeing, like, this doesn't run as smoothly as the rest of the game. It works, but it could be better. Like, I think that's...
Yeah.
That's where we are.
Which is good. It means we're not tearing everything out.
Yeah, we're not ripping any bits apart at this point.
and then we played Hydro Hackers.
Yeah.
And we did a full-on Hydro Hack with the cards and all that stuff.
Sweet.
Not the one you saw, because the one you saw was the...
right.
You inspired... Your group inspired
the rip all of this out and put something else in that has more roleplay.
Yeah, it's a far more roleplay.
Yeah, because it was very board gamey before, and I know you've ripped it apart and put it back together.
It's not very board gamey at the end. It's very roleplay through the whole thing, and then like the last act of the Hydro Hack, you break out the cards and you do the board gamey part. But it happens like all the way now at the end, and it's just kind of roleplay through to get everything set up. I think it came out much smoother, and thank you for helping hone that in.
It was interesting to be part of that and basically be part of the group discussion afterwards about how this didn't quite work the way we were expecting it to. And, you know, it's cool to be part of that design process and hopefully not break the designer's heart.
Well, you know what? That's what they tell you.
Only for a night.
Yeah. But you have to kill your darlings. You can't hold on to anything. If an entire group is like, this isn't enough role playing, then you got to, like, you can't fight it. You just have to be like, okay, well, now how do I solve that problem?
Yeah.
And problem, I think, has been solved.
Yeah, I think so. It was an interesting hack, though. Like, it should have gone really well for us, and it didn't.
The hack was pretty well set up, and I kept messing with the...
Yeah, even looking.
Right, I can randomly just move cards around without looking at them, and I put, like, so many bad cards in their way.
He put so many bad cards in our way, and he was swapping, like, the cards we were looking for them, and none of us knew that, because they were all face down. Like...
But it was good.
It was just crazy.
So yeah, overall, it was
bad luck.
Overall, it was a really good time.
Yeah, it was good.
Awesome. Well, let's get into our main topic. Earlier in the month, Senda, you posted an article about difficult decisions players have to make in games and how compelling and intense those could be. Could you give us a little summary of that article?
You know, I remembered it a couple minutes ago when I reread it, and now you're asking me this question and I don't really remember it again. Because this is my life. It's about decisions and difficult ones. So basically, the way that I see it is a difficult decision in the game is when you're giving your players two or more options, and there's not a really super clear, like, well, obviously one of these is going to work better than the other, right? And for me, I like them as emotional decisions, right? Like when I'm torn between two difficult emotional places. And it's interesting because there were some comments and I didn't really think about it until after the article had like gone live and people started commenting. So like, cool comments, guys, about like, well, you know, sometimes my players say they want difficult decisions and then they just get locked in indecision as a table and everybody gets frustrated. And I'm like, yeah, I've been in that place before too. I'm totally off the topic of summarizing this article. Sorry. I think the direction that I had originally intended the article to go from and what I'm fascinated by is those difficult emotional decisions when you have to make a call without a clear moral choice about which way to go versus like there's a left hall and a right hall in the dungeon. Let's fight about it for an hour. So it was basically my summary. I had looked at Chris's article, I think from about a year ago, about the 8 types of fun. And one of the ones that he didn't have actually a ton to say about was challenge. And to me, I think one of the challenge funds of role-playing games is getting those like hard decisions that you have to make where you don't have a clear path that like, you know, I can save my sister or I cannot save my sister. Like, okay, that's not a difficult decision.
You know, we literally wrote an entire role-playing game about
making difficult decisions.
Yeah.
we literally did. And we ran it at Genghis Khan yesterday. So I think that pretty much the meat of the article there is pretty much difficult decisions and how it can be fun and cool to use them because it's not something people always do.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this article because I think this is something that I'm not particularly good at as a GM. So I kind of wanted to pick your brains and have it recorded so other people can listen to this as well on how to bring these into your game. How do you bring these gray decisions that don't have an obviously right or wrong direction?
The really, really funny thing about this to me is it's something that I'm always striving for, but I'm sitting next to the guy that I think is amazing at this. Like, Phil is the reason that this article exists. Because the quote that I actually have at the top of the article, because I was in a scene as a player and Phil's character was basically like blackmailing me into letting, you know, my love interest put on this extremely flammable suit so he could set off fireworks around her and like make big news in the newspapers and stuff and get lots of money. And I like, and so like, he's the one who put me into the situation that like the quotes in this article ended up coming from. The first thing to me about putting in a difficult decision is having really clear stakes so that you know, like, you know, here's a decision you could make. Do you drink from this cup that might be poisoned or not? Well, like, okay, straight up initially, my reaction to that is no, thank you. I don't know if it's poisoned. But what are the stakes if I don't? Right? Like, there has to be a scale.
Drink
with
this
some
cup and save your companion.
Right.
And it might be poison.
It might be poison or might not.
Or don't drink from the cup and your companion will die from poison.
Right. I mean, so then now you have stakes. You have a little bit of weight on each side of the scale of kind of those two choices, right? So to me, that's the first thing is having really clear stakes about what will happen if you do or if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the next thing is you can raise the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if initially it's just you can save your companion, I mean, that's pretty good stakes to start off with. But like, I don't know, what's a good way to raise those?
You could save your companion or, you know, they'll release a plague upon the town that they're in right now.
Right. So you can involve more innocent people.
Sure, innocent people are
always stake.
I think the thing you have to be careful with when raising the stakes is that because your next point
Yeah.
Is that there's no clear best choice.
Yeah.
But if you raise the stakes asymmetrically.
Yeah.
Then it tips the decision. It becomes more logical to go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So really raising the stakes becomes really subtle because you either have to raise both. You really need to raise both stakes
mm-hmm.
or you need to just kind of turn the screw a little on one of them.
Yep.
Like time is running out is a good.
Yeah. Time is a good stake raising.
Yeah. Time's a good stake raising thing because it will force a decision.
Mm-hmm.
But if you clearly make like one like so clearly good, like before if it was your companion's going to die or you drink. You're like, you know, probably going to save the companion. But if it's like your companion is then going to turn into a plague that's going to kill the town.
Right. Yeah. So like, okay, I'm going to drink. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the downfall is like when you create a too clear path.
Right. Like the one that popped into my head, supers are a genre I enjoy. You could continue, apprehend the bad guy or save the innocent bystanders.
Yes.
The Gwen yep. Stacy.
Right.
The Gwen Stacy paradox.
And the trope is that you always go to save the innocent bystanders,
mm-hmm.
but it's the, if you add enough stakes that if you don't stop the bad guy now,
mm-hmm.
that forces the player into a bit more of a, oh God, what do I do?
Chris Nizak, as we all know, Chris was running masks for us. And one night our team was going to go out on a mission. And right as we were about to leave, I got a text message from my girlfriend that her dad had a heart attack and was in the hospital and could I come help? And not that my character had any powers to actually help, but I left the team to go be with her and ultimately went and got my mom, who was a scientist at this corporation, to give him a injection to save his life. But at the same time, because I left, the team got captured.
Oh.
So it was kind of messy because it wasn't the whole team. One team member got captured. And because I wasn't there, like I showed up late. And by the time I got there, like people were missing and it was kind of a mess. But it was good. It was a really tough choice. Like, do I ditch my girlfriend and stay with the team? Or do I go see my girlfriend? And in this case, my character, so what kind of led to that decision or even made the decision harder was I was playing the Janice.
Mm-hmm.
The one character who has like a real personal life. Like mechanically, and I was like, oh, I'm like, I gotta go, guys. And like, boom, sonic boom out the window kind of thing. But yeah, those are, those are tough. And emotion, I think, like, you said before, you can have emotional decisions. You can also have tactically tough decisions.
Yeah, the tactically tough decisions are the ones that sometimes I experience at the table that everybody just will sit there and will, talk about them for ages and ages trying to kind of hash everything through and figure out mm-hmm. which course of action. And I don't mm-hmm. know. It is interesting because personally, I don't find those as satisfying. I want emotionally difficult decisions.
Oh, you like emotional.
I like emotional gaming. It's like I wrote an article about that too a while ago about emotional gaming.
We were playing D&D last night with a friend who doesn't run very often. So he's running pretty much straight out of a module. And we got to a thing where there was obviously this slime on the floor. And we spent like a half an hour debating on how to deal with the slime when really all we needed to do was make a DC 10 athletics check to jump over it. And he's just sitting there behind the GM screen going, this isn't that hard. I don't know why they're doing this. Oh my God. Is this what I do to them when they're running?
And that's a case where I guess there's a good point that while interesting decisions are fun, they should be like really pertinent to moving the plot along.
And yeah.
so sometimes a GM has to just like nudge the group by being like, yes, you could deal with it. Like as you're talking about the ways you're dealing with it, you realize that you probably could just jump over this.
Like, let me just give you a little nudge.
Right. Like,
this is not my intended difficult decision for this session.
Yeah. Like,
as it was at the end of the session, it's the Tales from the Something mm-hmm. In. It basically took a whole bunch of old school modules and updated them. And we're in the White Plume Mountain one.
Oh, good God. You are in the Funhouse Dungeon.
and we got a ring that told us it had all these magical properties. And if you left the room without putting it on, it would lose all its properties and all this. And he's just like, okay, I'm gonna give this to you guys because it's really late. And he's like, the way this is written, you're supposed to have a long conversation and debate about who gets to wear the ring. But the moment you walk out the door, the ring loses. It just goes, becomes a normal ring.
Right.
It's basically an F you. And he's just like, I don't want to make you guys sit there and argue about who's getting the ring. So let's just skip past that part.
Historically, White Plume Mountain was a either Gen Con or Origins tournament module. So it's like made to be played as a one shot. And the dungeon itself is like a complete madhouse. Like, I mean, there's no dungeon ecology. It is frightfully dangerous at like almost every corner. And it's completely weird. Like the further you get into it, like the weirder it gets. I won't give any spoilers to Ange, but there's some really weird stuff that winds up going on in there. But it's a great adventure.
He had fun role-playing a very bored Sphinx.
Uh-huh. The Sphinx, yes.
Who he's just like, ugh. Anyway, back to difficult decisions. Any last words we want to say on this? Advice for, you know, ways to make this impactful for your players?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, you were, Sunday, you were saying before you like emotional decisions, but keep in mind you also like emotional role-playing.
I do, because that's a thing for me.
And there are people who love tactical role-playing.
Yep.
So tactical, interesting/difficult decisions are also
valid.
Yeah, are also valid. So you can have these decisions in any kind of style of play, and you can make them based on the things that are important to your players. So if emotional things are important to your players, then, you know, you want emotional stakes tied to all of those choices. And if it's tactical, it might be, you know, yes, you could gain position over the enemy, but you have to go up this perilous, you know, pass and some of you may get hurt or whatever. Or you can, you know, you can reach the battlefield earlier and set up, but you won't have, you know, the upper advantage, but you'll all reach it safely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a thing where a tactical group would wrestle with the odds of, do we risk getting hurt but get the advantage of being overhead versus do we get to the battlefield first unscathed but we don't have any positional advantage and we're going to just go toe-to-toe, you know, with this enemy?
It's because as Star Wars has taught us, higher ground is everything.
Apparently. Yeah, I have the higher ground. Right? That's all you need. I mean, I don't know why it's only a plus 2 bonus.
I know, right? It should be like plus 10. Right?
Yeah. Anyway, so you can have these in tactical ways. I mean, in fact, like heist planning, any kind of break-in that anyone's ever done is really a interesting decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically saying, our decision is we need to pick a way to get into this thing. And if there isn't a clear answer, like, you must go through the gates.
Right.
Right? Then, you know, you must go through the gates in order to reach the mountain. Then the interesting decision is, what decision do we make to get in? Do we go over the wall? Do we tunnel under? Do we polymorph and fly? And then you run the one risk is that too many choices for the decision is what leads to analysis paralysis. It's what bogs down play and those kinds of things. So sometimes if you want to rein that in, especially at like the planning level, is make sure that you only present them like a couple. Like after you have surveyed, you realize there's the gate, the wall, and flying over.
Right.
And then pull back.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the one other thing that I would say is that not every decision in your game needs to be a difficult decision, right?
Absolutely.
It is definitely one as a GM, you want to pick the times to throw those out there.
Yeah.
Because not everything should be the slime situation. Because if every decision is difficult, it won't be fun anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to that, if your players are making every decision
difficult,
you have a group dynamic issue.
Yeah.
So if they're arguing, like not arguing, but if they're getting tense over going left or right in the dungeon, there's a leadership issue at the table.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of power struggle going on about why.
That's different. That's not fun.
That's not the kind of difficult decision we want to have, right?
No.
Yeah.
Do I throw the ring into the lava?
Right.
Or do I keep the ring?
Right.
Yeah. I think there can also be a degree of overthinking it.
Yes.
Yes.
And like, I think that's what we ran into with the slime. It's just like, we were overthinking what the problem was. We were expecting it to be more than just a little acid trap on the floor.
Right.
Well, I mean, there's a secondary part to that, too, where it depends a lot on what kind of game you're playing. I mean, you're playing in an old school dungeon. It's fair to treat everything that comes up like that.
Right.
You don't know what's going to kill you, right?
Right.
And that's how that game is kind of meant to run.
And that's, I think, where the job where the GM comes in and, you know, has to, like, sometimes give a little nudge, like, nope, this isn't the interesting one.
This isn't the big one. Like, this isn't the big decision for the game. Like,
right.
Go with your easiest instinct. Yeah. I mean, as a GM, you can kind of give people a little poke if you're like, wow, we're getting stuck on this and this doesn't seem like a lot of fun for hey, jump over the slime. Like, yeah, you can give a player a little push.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we at one point we were discussing puzzles, and it's like we told him, you know, like at some point the player is just going to get frustrated enough that the character is just going to start smashing things.
Yep. That's definitely the thing. Leroy Jenkins problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Leroy Jenkins.
Like that's the Leroy Jenkins, the Leroy Jenkins threshold, right? That's the threshold. the point at which the problem in the game become the only answer is to smash it.
Yeah.
Is the Leroy Jenkins. The Leroy Jenkins point. Yeah.
Good. Coin terminology.
Yeah, that needs to become part of the lexicon.
We should put that in
the
nomenomenon. Yeah, the nomenomenon.
The Leroy Jenkins threshold. Yep. Okay, I think we've covered a topic, and I think we can start getting out of here. So, special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome GNOME supporters like James Malloy, Eric Bontz, and GM Gerrymander. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the GNOME Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the GNOME Stew website to the GNOME Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by Hard Choices, the latest fragrance from Expressive Panda, made with the tears of free-range players experiencing only the purest artisanal emotional gaming.
I cannot make this decision alone.
If you're enjoying the GNOMEcast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows, like Down with D&D, where Chris and the Mad Wizard Sean Merwin dish about everything D&D with a focus on the brand and the newest edition of the world's most popular tabletop RPG. You can find all of us on GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Phil and Senda, where else can we find you on the internet?
You can find us on our own show, Pandas Talking Games, that releases every Monday, right?
Yes. You don't remember?
I know when we record them, I don't remember when we release
it. Yeah, it comes out every Monday.
Comes out every Monday.
With far more outtakes.
So many more outtakes.
And you can reach me on my other show that I do on Tuesdays, live on Twitch, the Misdirected Mark podcast. And you can always find me on Twitter at DNA Phil.
Yeah, you can also find me on my other podcast, She's a Super Geek. And that is at Sasky Podcast on Twitter. And you can also find me personally on Twitter at IDELLAMITHLYNND, Idella Mifflin.
Or you can just go to SAS Geek.
And
at SAS Geek,
I know.
And then find Senda in the
I know. Event. It's It's much easier. It's just, SAS Geek. I don't know. I can't change it now.
No, you can't.
It's too late.
It's far too late.
It's far too late.
Too many followers. You'll never get it all back.
You can find me at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13, at Twitter. And hanging around in the Misdirected Mark community, I'm there too. So, do you guys think we avoided the stew this week?
I think so. I'll put in a good word with the cooks.
I don't know. I think it's a difficult decision.
Dun, dun, dun.